Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This week, we're sponsored by Blue Square Box Spur. They deliver you a meal in an impossibly small box that you can use to make a website.
You'll get a new meal every month, and it will probably be pretty cheaply made.
Made of micromodal fabric. They'll hold...
I don't know about you, but I'm not very good at using websites to buy food. So I made my own website to buy food.
Audible.
Speaking of Audible, today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese. Also, a huge special thanks to our patrons over at Patreon. Our current patrons are John Donna, Stephanie L., Terry Needleman, and Max Lunig. They give us a little extra financial support that helps us keep the lights on here at Musicals with Cheese. If you'd like to join them in supporting us and get tons of fun perks, such as patron-only commentaries, we just have one up there on cats, and there's another one coming out.
I love cats so much.
There's another one coming out in June you're not going to want to miss. And you also get our episodes a day early and a ton of other stuff, so come join us on Patreon. Andrew, you want to talk about our affiliate link?
Sure, I'll do the last of the shilling. We have a link for Amazon. If you click it, it's in the description, and you buy anything, we will get part of that money. It doesn't cost you any extra. Just support us with that. It's
all
nice
right, thing. Let's get on to the real show. Hello, I'm Jesse McAnally. And welcome to Musicals with Cheese, a podcast where I try to get Andrew to like musical theater. And we have a super special guest, another musical theater creator on the internet. It is Tommy of Musical Theater MASH.
Hello! You know, when they used to call kids super special in school, it meant they got to take classes in a different room with padded walls. Which is really how I feel most of my life, being super special in my own super special way.
You know who else felt pretty special? George Surratt.
Who?
Because he was over...
You know what, Jess?
Am I going to... Wait, you ready? Should we ride there on our segue?
Ah, you did it! You did it! It's like we're on that other podcast you did!
Shh, don't talk about it.
I don't get the joke, but I'm sure the audience is laughing.
They're laughing so hard.
Andrew, no one is happier that you're here than me.
It is Wednesday on the cast with the crew. Let's go.
So, yes, pull up your paints, and today we're talking about Sunday in the Park with George.
Well, there are worse things than staring at the water on a Sunday. There are worse things than staring at the water as you're posing for a picture being painted by your lover in the middle of the summer on an island in the river on a Sunday.
So Sunday in the Park with George is a musical with music and lyrics by Stephen Sondheim and a book by James Lapine. It was inspired by the French painter George Seurat's painting A Sunday Afternoon on the Island of Grand Jatte. The plot revolves around George, a fictionalized version of Seurat, who immerses himself deeply in painting his masterpiece, and his great-grandson, also named George, it's convenient, but whatever, a conflicted and cynical contemporary artist. The Broadway production opened in 1984. It also won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, which never happens for musicals, and it
no.
won a bunch of like Drama Desk awards, but it didn't win the Tony.
It lost the Tony
to La Cage aux Folles,
and famously God, I can't even think of his name right now.
Jerry Herman
said in his acceptance speech for La Cage about his musical that it proves that the hummable song is still in style or something like that. And people took it as a huge slight to Sunday in the Park with George, which, frankly speaking, doesn't have a lot of hummable songs.
What are you talking about?
Not really, no.
Well, you know.
Sunday by the blue, purple, yellow, red colors.
And then what happens next?
It was like blue, 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 or something like that, right?
Red, 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 orange, blue, 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 I can't do it like Mandy Patinkin.
That is oddly specific. No one can do it. No one can do it like Mandy Patinkin. Can I tell you a little inside baseball, a joke that I have with my boyfriend?
Let's go.
One of his college friends was having a night that, you know, one prefers not to remember. And later on in that night, under the influence of some alcohol, was about about falling asleep, but his friend woke up and looked at him, and with no prompting said, "Oh, I miss Mandy Patinkin," and then fell asleep immediately. And so whenever we talk about Mandy Patinkin, we look at each other and go, "Oh, I miss Mandy Patinkin."
I said that exactly when he pulled out of Great Comet.
Oh, God. Don't open those wounds with me, Jess. Don't. Why?
Just thought I'd bring that up. But this was Sondheim's first show after the huge failure of Merrily and his big falling out with Hal Prince. And he's like, I'm done with musicals forever. I'm just going to write books and draw maps and shit. And then he met James Lapine and he was looking at the painting Sunday afternoon on the island of La Grande Jatte. And he's like, "Oh, they all got their own stories." And James Lapine's like, "Oh, we're missing the main character. Who? The painter." And he's like, "That's when I got a musical."
A Sunday afternoon on the island of La Grande Jatte is a gigantic painting in the Art Institute of Chicago. If you've ever seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off, it is also the painting that Cameron gets enthralled in one of the sequences in that movie. And in person, like, it is stunning in its size and detail. Like, it is no wonder that this is one of the only paintings that's inspired a musical.
It is gorgeous. Like, even when you get up close, you can see where each dot is specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got to see it live, and I know you have, too, because you used to live in Chicago. Mm-hmm.
Yes. First time I saw the painting, I must have been, God, I was young, maybe 7 or 8. And
you were like, "God, this is boring."
And then, like, actually, yes, God, this art museum is boring. And then you've, like... It is weird, I think, nowadays in contemporary society to call a painting stunning because we can reproduce whatever we want on the screens in front of us. But seeing this painting in person is so much better than seeing any reproduction of it simply because of its size. Like, it's huge. There's a whole room, like, with a wall dedicated to it in the Art Institute in Chicago. It is, like, a beautiful painting.
So I've just been thinking, if he's French and his name is Georges Seurat... Shouldn't it be like George Surrey?
Surratt, I think. Like, O sound.
I'm dying.
But let me clarify what happened in real life compared to the musical. It fictionalizes,
yes,
Surratt's life. In fact, none of his children survived beyond infancy, and he had no grandchildren. Surratt's common-law wife was Madeleine Knobloch, who gave birth to his two sons, one after his death. Unlike Dot, Knobloch was living with Surratt when he died, and did not immigrate to America. She died of cirrhosis of the liver at the age of 35. That would have made a great musical.
It's like that part in Hamilton where Lin-Manuel Miranda is like, "And then Hamilton got on a spaceship and he went to space to be with his space wife, but she's a mistress. Boo, America!"
That did happen.
Yeah,
right?
It did. It's truly real life.
So what are our thoughts on Sunday in the Park with George? Tommy, you're on record of not liking this musical.
Oh, God, I have a sordid and storied history with this musical. I still, it always pains me to talk about it because people get angry when I don't like things, which is weird.
How dare you not like Shrek the Musical?
I know, or when I got...
Or the movie.
Or SpongeBob. Anyway.
We didn't get shit for SpongeBob.
I recently rewatched Shrek the Movie, actually. Like, the movie. It's weird to rewatch. No, Sunday in the Park with George, like, my experience with it is bizarre in my relation to other Sondheim pieces, because it was one that stayed out of my lexicon for a long time. And then eons ago, back when I used to do videos, I watched it for part of Sondheim September and was legitimately disappointed on camera in ways that are difficult to articulate. And the blowback was so immense that there is a follow-up video, which I have never rewatched. I've never rewatched either of these, actually, since the whole thing blew over, where I talk about some of my mixed opinions about Sunday in the Park with George. And, you know, I think my experience has molded and changed since that time, but I don't know. I still don't know how I feel about this show.
So are you leaning positive or negative, do you think, now?
Oh, don't make me make a decision. There are parts and feelings of this show that I greatly enjoy. And I think structurally and commercially, it has some glaring flaws that the people involved, I feel like I should know, they should know better about and should have done better about. I'm also, like, I have a predisposition to be weary of art about artists, because I feel that can become quickly self-indulgent in a way that I don't appreciate. And this one in particular, especially where it stands in Sondheim's life, risks doing that, but also happens to say a lot of things I feel about art, but it happens to say those things in the part that I think is unnecessary in the musical, or challenging at the very least. I don't know. I'm like dead 50-50 on Sunday in the Park with George, very honestly.
How about you, Andrew? What are your thoughts?
I mean, obviously, I'm just giving a first impression on this, basically, but it was okay. I didn't really love it. I can't say I loved it.
How did you experience it, Andrew? Did you listen to it? Did you watch it? Like,
it was, I watched it.
Okay.
So, generally, Jess will send me, like, a well-known video of it or something like that.
Did you watch
that version?
Did you watch the Mandy Patinkin, Bernadette Peters with the lasers? And
yeah, there was definitely lasers.
Okay. No, it's hugely important because the different productions of this are hugely different.
I liked the first half.
Uh-huh.
Decent amount, and I didn't like the second half very much.
That's about where I stood the first time I watched it. It is interesting, and like in prep for this, I reread the libretto and noticed things I never noticed before. And I don't know, like that still feels not okay. Like a musical is supposed to be able to be consumed on first brush, maybe?
Well, I mean, ordinarily it wouldn't be very easy to rewatch this.
True. So. Yeah. Like that's the art form it's supposed to exist in. Like you can see it once. But like that's the crazy thing about Sunday in this Park with George specifically, and it's why I really struggle with art about artists, is like, are you using your art as a meta construct to try and teach me something about your art with artists by making this a difficult to understand piece to try and teach me a thing about the art that you're trying to create? Sorry. I get a little tense about these things.
It's too meta.
It is a little beyond meta. I think it is interesting that it has seen a recent, like, it, you know, it did fine in the 80s, but certainly has seen a much, much bigger following in the early aughts. And then recently with the Jake Gyllenhaal / Dr. Mysterio production. Is that his name? Dr. Mysterio? Mr. Mysterio?
I think it's just Mysterio.
No, that's the villain from the new Spider-Man movie.
Yes, Jake Gyllenhaal, who played George Surratt in the most recent production of Sunday in the Park with George.
So Mysterio?
Yeah, that guy. With the globe head and all. I want you to picture that in your head.
That is, I mean, yeah, that would work.
My theory is the Jake Gyllenhaal production had like a hard end on it. It had to finish its production by a certain date.
They had to finish
And if you look at the timeline, I'm pretty sure it had to finish up so that Jake Gyllenhaal could go into production for the Spider-Man movie.
Timeline checks out. Headcanon accepted.
Wait, but the guy from the Spider-Man movie is from a different timeline, so that doesn't make sense.
Different timeline, Sondheim. The Sondheim cinematic universe.
The Sondheim line.
Get out.
The Sondheim line is all messed up because we got Merrily going backwards and like it just doesn't make sense.
And in the last 5 years, the name of the book is the same name as Frank's film and Merrily Roll Along. It's all a mess.
Oh man, what's going on here?
Now, does anyone care about my opinion on Sondheim?
Sure.
No.
I care.
That was almost the perfect like timing. That was great. I love this musical, but I also watched it when I was at a very impressionable age, where I was in high school when I first watched this, and I saw it as a back-to-back with Into the Woods. So, and if you ask me, that's a perfect pairing because it got most of the actors from both of them.
Right. And it is kind of like a Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It kind of, those two pieces specific. Oh, you throw Passion in there because then you got the narrator from Into
true.
The Woods.
Yeah.
That 3-disc collection is a Marvel Cinematic. That is a Son timeline.
Iron Man 1, 2, and
that's
3.
This is our next commentary. The Son timeline.
God.
But no, I think it's like fantastic. And I'm speaking as a person whose favorite film is literally All That Jazz, which is the most like self-indulgent, like a musical about my art film. So I was prepared because I followed it up with Into the Woods, which is very much like one act right. is one thing, what second act is another thing. So I'm like, yeah. I was kind of leered into that already with
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So by the time I got to Sunday, I'm like, oh, we're in the 80s, whatever, I'm in. So I was a little
True.
Bit more mentally ready for that. And
yes.
this isn't discrediting your thoughts either. It's just how I experienced it. So it didn't really affect me in that way. And I was more able to see like the connection of like, oh, past George was like being criticized for being too new, and then future George can't be new enough. And like that shows the difference mm-hmm. in art than how we perceive it then and then. And I thought I was smarter because, like, because we all think we're so smart in fucking high school. Like, I get it, and a lot of people don't, and I'm so artsy. This is sometimes, like, blah, 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 pretentious art boy shit.
I mean, really, it's about Curious George finishing the hat, the man in the yellow hat, George the monkey, painting the monkeys.
But when I first heard finishing the hat, I wept. I wept, like, really, really hard.
Yeah, okay.
Like, that really affected me, because, like, yeah. there was a feeling I had for a long time where I would just, like, stop focusing on people around me and just focus on whatever the fuck I was working on, like, art, like, whatever mm-hmm. it be, and I just didn't have a way to put that into words, and he's like,
yeah.
you just, everything else in the world doesn't matter, you, everything is out yeah. of the window, and you just have to look at the hat, finish the hat, and then you move yeah. on to the next thing, and I'm like,
yeah,
oh, that's what I do, and oh, yeah. no.
Yeah, no, I think that, like, I relate to that on a deep, deep level. And I think it's also one of the reasons why I struggle with this piece, because a lot of my entry into musical theater is certainly, you know, one of analysis and one of depth, but it still remains for me a piece of escapism. Like, I enjoy exploring things that aren't part of my life, and, you know, I gotta stay home and finish the hat. I've done that thousands of times with varying effects, you know, whether it's a set design or a video or a podcast or something. Like, hey, no, sorry, I can't come out tonight. I have to finish this thing. And I don't have to finish it for a deadline. I just have to finish it because I need to now. And like, Sondheim talks about that in his book, and like, that's a thing that he relates to on a visceral level, and, you know, he's much more talented than anyone in the world, and I don't know, that is a thing that makes me truly and deeply uncomfortable in a way that not a lot of other things do.
It does make George a more compelling character, though, because you can really relate to him,
mm-hmm.
which is why I think the first half works better than the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is, the first half, George is basically a robot, and then he has that one moment of emotional introspection, and then becomes a robot. Where I think George in Act 2 is emotional. He has these deep emotional connections with people in a way that present George has. Because
right.
George, in the future, doesn't have that hat-finishing side of him. He doesn't turn
yeah.
off the world when he has to finish that. He has to put it together, talk to people, have that social commentary,
yeah.
be close to his grandmother. Sure, his marriage doesn't work out, but they're still really good friends. He has emotional connections, and mm-hmm. but therefore he can't make great art, which is also a problematic idea in and of itself.
Yes, yes it is. And like, should you, you know, I think it is problematic in general. It's certainly problematic nowadays that we have this kind of presumption that like the artist must be a destroyed human for them to be able to do art. You see it all the time in like, you know, stand-up comedians.
It comes from Beethoven.
Sure, absolutely. Like, you know, there must be something terribly wrong with you for you to be gifted enough to do art, which I work with plenty of artists who are just fine, normal human beings. You know, not that there's anything wrong with being out of the average, but it is weird that there is this presumption about, you know, what an artist should be.
Well, it's artists have to be depressed because, I mean, starting with Beethoven and even modern day, you have like people like Kurt Cobain where it's like, mm-hmm. oh, well, he was a good artist because he was so depressed.
Or even Robin
yeah,
Williams.
Exactly.
Like, well,
like,
yeah,
Robin Williams, people just latch onto that idea that like, oh, they're so in pain, that's why they're so talented.
Yeah, Johnny Cash, like, on and on and on. Everyone, every artist, you know.
But that's not, that's not really, it's not cause and effect.
What do you mean?
Like, I don't think the pain doesn't cause the art. They just happen to be in pain, and they also are talented.
Or the fact that art is a coping mechanism often for pain as well. Like, it's not because the pain doesn't cause the art. It's just the art helps alleviate the pain.
Yeah, the art is a remedy for the pain. There is, and I'm going to misrepresent it in this moment, but there's a, I think it's even a comic that's like a, an extrapolation of a Stephen King interview about how he used to escape into his book writing and like was really into drugs and a bunch of stuff and like used it as an escape for his art, and then later in life like turned that on its head, and that like art isn't the escape from his life. Art is the thing he does so that he can continue to live his life, which is the important thing. You know, and like all this stuff is wrapped up in Sunday in a Park with George. You know, what is art? What is the artist? What is the line between the two? How do we even draw that line? It's really interesting when you look at the show. I noticed it rereading it today. In Act One, most of the focus is on the artist. Most of the focus is on George and his character and what he's doing or isn't doing, how he is or isn't loving Dot, what he is or isn't working on. And there's not a lot of focus on the art itself. If there is, it's only briefly so someone can comment on like, oh, and he's such a stupid whatever. And then you flip to Act Two, and at least in the beginning of Act Two, almost all of the focus is on the art itself. Oh, Chromalume number 46 or whatever it is. I'd expected three, but this. And we're looking for, you know, this. Or, and what a weird, I put all the names on my, you know, of the donors on the thing, my thing. And I'm so sorry about the electricity, but your art didn't work. But the actual focus of Act Two is so much more on the artist. Like, we're actually looking at George's character. Or in Act One, we spend so much of the time looking at the physical art. The whole thing culminates with a physical representation of the piece of art. And so, like, that dynamic between art and artist is fascinating to me.
What do you think,
anyway,
Andrew?
I like the dog.
I hate the dog!
I love the dog!
I hate the dog so much! Sorry, I might have clipped right there and woken up my neighbors. I hate the dog song!
Why?
More than anything.
Okay, I hate the dog song. I like the song where they say that they like the dog.
What?
But the dog song.
What's wrong with the dog song?
So many things are wrong with
it. It's stupid.
It's stupid. It's such a waste of time. They put it in Act One so that something happy happens in Act One, but we don't need to do that because everybody loves Louis. Sorry, I hate the dog song.
Why is one of the army guys fake?
Why is one of the army guys...
There's so many questions.
Yeah,
why is one of the army guys a fake plank of wood? I don't get it. Do they not get an extra?
I mean, that might have been it.
They're like, here, we'll just use this plank of wood. It's artsy.
I don't get it either. I really don't. And in a lot of, if you look at some other different productions, they won't do that sort of thing. A lot of the recorded 80s one is kind of mired in some 80s stagecraft stuff, like the dress that opens up and stands on its own. And you're like, ooh,
I thought that was pretty silly.
It's so silly. And it, because it is so silly and like draws attention to itself, it totally detracts from the moment.
I raise you that, but it's that didn't detract from the moment for me. But the pregnant belly, the bustle that becomes the that one, I was like, oh, that's stupid.
Yeah. There's a lot of, well, and then what was high-tech lighting design for the time when they reveal the Chromalume, and it's like, pew, 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 look at this stupid thing.
It's like Star Trek.
Yeah, it is. It's like Star Trek, the musical from the 80s.
I wasn't even sure what was happening with the laser thing. I was like, so is he going to, like, recreate the dot thing with the laser?
It's a variation on a theme, Andrew. God damn.
It's variation on a theme, absolutely. It's all, it's just like Beethoven. It's like, it's, yeah.
So what did you guys like?
Well, I liked the dog.
You mentioned, and I yelled and woke up my neighbors. What did you like about the dog?
What did you like specifically about the dog?
I just like that line where she says that she likes the dog. I like in the first act when they have all the different characters and they're showing all the people from the painting, and I kind of wish that was the entire thing, because I just don't understand the second act.
And so it was for a while. Like, that's the crazy thing about this show, is like, this was Sondheim's first foray into nonprofit theater, where like, you don't really need to make money to like do your show. People are going to come and witness your art to begin with. So they started this at Playwrights Horizons off Broadway, and it only ran for like 20 some shows, and only the last three had Act Two in them. Like, most people saw this show with just Act One as like, we're still working on this, we're still figuring this out, and we're going to add Act Two in the future. And then
it's like Sondheim was in the room with us.
Thank you. Thank you. That's my my fourth iteration of my Sondheim impression.
Everyone missed it. His eyes were closed and is like
my head was rolling back. I was laying down. My beard suddenly turned gray all of a sudden. I was holding a pencil and a pad. What other Sondheim markers are there? No.
I walked out of Be More Chill in Act One.
Oh, God. Don't get me started. old wounds opening up. No.
Be More Chill's about computers, right? So he doesn't understand that.
Yeah, he doesn't have a phone. We talked about this, maybe, but I don't know if we were recording. No, but so then they add Act Two, preview it for basically three shows, and they're like, yeah, let's move this to Broadway. Which is risky. And I think it shows. Like, I do think Act Two is less thought out than Act One.
Yeah, but it's got like three of the best songs ever written in it.
Yeah, it's really pretty, I know.
The one about the lasers. What else was there?
There's Putting It Together, which hits me really hard because of, like, I've had to raise money for art before, and it fucking sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
And Children in Art, which is just such a really sweet moment, and you remember what feelings feel like in the second act.
Yes.
And then, of course, Move On, which is literally a quote that's on every single resume I've ever submitted. Anything from you, anything you do, let it come from you, then it will be new. Top of my resume, right under my name.
That's good. That's like Sondheim's
just like you
chocolate.
Wrote it, Jess.
Like, this is why I struggle with this, because I feel these artist feelings, but it seems like sometimes the unspoken secret I want to cling to in art is that, like, we don't talk about our problems, we just make our art. Like, you hide the sweat and tears and blood, and this show kind of brings out the sweat and tears and blood in even maybe a bigger way than Merrily We Roll Along did.
No one got blinded by acid in this one, though.
That's true. It's good.
Which
that
is a downside, really.
Is that a requirement you have for musicals now, Andrew?
I like it when that happens.
If he had, like, thrown the acid at Dot, it would have been Dot removal. I hate her name, though. It is, like, the most on-the-fucking-nose
yeah,
name ever.
It's like, this is a metaphor.
He paints with dots.
Do you
her
get it?
Her name is Dot.
It's a metaphor. He was going to call the song Move On Primer. I think it was Move On that he was going to call Primer. Both to be about Dot's grammar primer, but also, like, paint primer. And he very specifically says, like, but that seemed too clever, so I didn't do it. I'm like, good.
Yeah, good.
It was too clever. No one would understand.
I think in our Merrily video, I talked about how up his ass Sondheim is and how overconfident he is. And, like,
yeah, see, like, I don't know. Because he has these moments of, like, total self-doubt that you see come up now and again. Like in the
it's all a facade.
Well, in the very back of Look I Made A, you can find his preface to God, which was the most recent song he's written for Sondheim on Sondheim in 2010. And it is like a self-depreciating, like, oh, the man's a god, about himself. And the intro he gives is like, yeah, you know, this is stupid. And if you listen to the song, it, like, paints him in this really, like, self-depreciating light. Like any artist is uncertain of their art, no matter how ridiculously successful they are, which is like both reassuring and horribly demoralizing at the same time.
So is he doubting his own art, or is he actually so egotistical that he wants people to think he's doubting his own art?
Ooh, George or Sondheim?
Either one.
They're
kind of the same person, it seems.
That is an interesting question. I mean, if you look at what would be the full Sondheim canon, Sunday in the Park with George is the fourth most recent Sondheim show, realistically speaking, if you clump Bounce together into one big show. So that means, 1984, what, several decades ago, is his fourth most recent production. Like, if you map them out on a timeline, you can see they get more and more and more spaced out. And in between the lines in Finishing the Hat and Look, I Made a Hat, there is like a whole narrative of self-doubt, especially as he's growing older, especially related to with the opinions people have of him. People like us, right? People who do things like this, who exalt him onto like higher levels, and like he wants to be able to meet that, but is scared that he won't. It's a huge reason why Marilou Rolong was so absolutely destroying to him, because he was the golden boy of Broadway and then got shot down big time. Like, most egos can't take a quarter of that destruction, much less what he got. And he took it with, I think, as much humbleness as people could, and then came back to it and made Sunday in the Park with George, which people exalt as this, hugely metaphorical, artistic, non-commercially viable piece. He didn't come back right after Marilou Rolong and write Into the Woods. Hugely successful blockbuster film, performed in high schools across the country, got the commerciality of musical theater. He instead came back and wrote Sunday in the Park with George, an introspective piece about the artist doubting his own art. Like, I really think sometimes self-doubt is absolutely legitimate. And, again, it is comforting because we all have that same self-doubt, and terrifying because it means that self-doubt will never, ever, ever go away.
No, we never self-doubt, though. We never self-doubt the art of making art, which is putting it together, which means making money. Andrew, do you want to go into a mid-show announcement?
Oh, God. Yeah, sure.
There was some gymnastics to make that fucking work.
You are the worst, Jess. Jess is my dot, okay?
Yeah, he can stand in place and all his clothes just stay there and he can walk away.
Ooh. Oh, I'd like to see that.
All right. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese to get started today. Today, I am suggesting Act 1 from the autobiography by Moss Hart by James Lapine. Narrated by several people. And it's pretty good because James Lapine also wrote the book to Sunday in the Park with George. I'm so clever. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese. Again, that's audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese for your free audiobook. Andrew, talk about our affiliate link.
Oh my goodness, there's a link in the description of all of our episodes that goes to Amazon. If you buy anything after clicking that link, we will receive a portion of that money that you spend on Amazon. Just for buying things you'd buy anyways. So do that if you like us. Thank you.
Yes, please. Tommy, do you have anything you to say?
What should we do if we don't like you?
Send all the emails to musicaltheatermash@gmail.com.
Yeah, about how... Yeah, send me more sad emails about you're afraid that I'm dead or something.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I know. Welcome
Yikes.
To my world. No, I read all the emails. Most of them are very nice. Only a few people think I'm dead, which is weird, because I still send drunken tweets from time to time.
My question is, I am from the Helena Bonham Carter fan club, and I've got a few choice words for you.
God.
Oh, boy.
No, my favorite is like,
it's over.
Hey, I enjoyed your MAME video, but the audio was weird. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't know what I was doing. Anyway.
Oops.
Oops.
All right, let's get back to the show, folks.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
The tip of a stay, right under the tit. No, don't give in, just lift the arm a bit.
Don't lift the arm.
Sunny in the park with George.
Also, hi, please.
Not even a nod, as if I were trees. The ground could open, he would still say please. Never know with you, George. Who can know with you? The others I knew, George. Before we get through, I'll get to you too. God, I am so...
All right, let's talk about the music, because we somehow did not talk about almost any songs.
There's music in this show?
Well, I mean, the songs are secondary.
The song...
This isn't like a Muppet movie or something. Like, the songs really aren't that important in this.
What did you guys think of that opening number, Sunday in the Park with George? Like, the two-hander number. It's like the strangest opening in the world.
I love the music in this show. I know.
All right.
This is why I'm conflicted.
And cut.
End of show. Outro. Audible.com brought you here. Welcome. No. No. So, Sunday in the Park with George, the opening number, leads in via musical motifs into Color and Light, leads in through musical motifs to We Do Not Belong Together, leads into through musical motifs Move On. And it is this like four song microcosm of the progression of the show. It's like, you know, boy meets girl, boy can't get girl, boy loses girl, boy finds girl again. It's, the music is beautiful and gives me great anxiety. The end, a thesis by musical theater MASH, maybe when I get my PhD.
You also don't have to wait at all before they get right into the title of the show, which is excellent.
That's true. Do you ever like wait the whole movie or show or something? You're like, oh, say the title. Say the title.
When are you gonna say it?
So they never said Endgame during Endgame. You know, in that moment, Endgame spoilers ahead, but in that moment where the Hulk was like eating all those lollipops and like got really tiny and turned purple, and he was like, oh, this is such the Avengers end of times. And I was like, he was so close.
Oh, he could have just said it, you know?
The game is ending!
Remember when Ant-Man, like, Hawkeye picked up Ant-Man to fire him at Thanos? And,
right.
Like, Hawkeye said, this is your end game.
Right? When everyone, like, finally got along again, and Thanos was like, hey, guys, you want to play Monopoly? And they, like, sat around the table, like, and, you know...
7 hours later.
And Iron Man, like, finally got Park Place, and it was like, ha! This is the end of the game! And you're like, oh, you were so close!
You know what, though? It could be worse. You know, there are worse things than staring at the water on a Sunday. There are worse things than staring at the water as a poting for a picture after sleeping in a fair, after getting up at 7 to go over to a lion in the middle of a river at a half hour from the city on a Sunday.
Jess, Andrew and I were having a moment.
Jess, we were doing like a thing, and then you're going to bring in musicals again? Like,
yeah, You gotta wait for the improv show lighting designer to turn the lights off and put the next needle drop in. It goes boop, 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 and then we start the next bit.
I just wanted to bring up how this song wasn't just a Holy Sondheim creation. He tried to do several openings, and James Lapine's just like, that isn't it. And then Sondheim's like, fine, you write me what you think it should be, and I'll try my best. And so James Lapine wrote this long monologue, and literally just Sondheim took it and made it rhyme and fit into a meter. And I think that's pretty cool. If like, especially almost in the look, I made a hat, like, you've got the comparison, it's like, wow, really? Wow. And I think that shows you a bit more of how Sondheim's like work ethic than anything else in the book, or like work technique.
It is interesting, he talks a lot about Lapine as a collaborator, and like how he was a different kind of collaborator than he had experienced before, like very artful and quiet, and it is interesting that Lapine ends up very often directing the things that he writes. He did it with Sunday, and he ends up doing it with Woods, and he's done it a bunch of times.
Falsettos
and I think Spelling Bee, although don't quote me on that.
No, he didn't write Spelling Bee. I remember it started as an improv.
That's true. Maybe he is quoted as a book writer. Anyway, sometimes I make shit up on the internet. Whoops.
It's true now.
Lucille Ball is the best meme. You heard it here, folks. Let's talk about Color and Light.
How do you work without the right? Bright, white, light. How you fathom George?
Red, 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 orange, red, red, orange, orange. Pick up blue, pick up red, pick up orange. From the blue, green, blue, green, blue, green. Circle on the violet, diagonal, diagonal. No, yellow, comma, yellow, comma. Nom, 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 nom. Still sitting, red that perfume, blue all night, blue, blue, the window shut, dot, 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 sitting, dot, dot, waiting, dot, dot, getting fat, 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 more yellow, dot, dot, waiting to go out, out, out. No, 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 George, finish the hat, have to finish the hat first, hat, 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 it's hot in here.
I like this song.
Yeah?
What do you like about it?
I like when he starts babbling like a lunatic.
It's weird that Sondheim put the breakdowns number as the second song.
I like all the colors.
I like how they're both singing about like the same thing, but in different ways. Kind of. I don't know. It's great. It's good. I don't know what to say.
I love one of my favorite moments of this show is when like we are seeing George slowly forget that he's supposed to go to the Follies with Dot tonight, right? And like you kind of know a little bit before the characters do that this is about to happen. But then Dot comes in and says, what color dress should I wear tonight, the blue or the red? And immediately George says red, because colors are his jam. And like, Dot, you look good in red. You should wear red. And then she's like, aren't you going to get ready? And he's like, why? And it is fascinating because like he's like, you should be wearing the red dress. Why are you wearing the red dress? Oh, the Follies? I can't go. Got to paint this painting. And like that reversal is such a microcosm of their characterization.
Like he looks at her and he doesn't even see a human. He just sees the way she catches light, the color of her eyes, the color of her hair, and just like how it all fits up. Like how she visually is represented as a painting in life. How he would paint her.
Do you think George loves Dot?
No.
He cannot divide his feelings as neatly as you, and he is not escaping to his canvas. He is living in it.
He does also say to her that, like, you know, you, what do you want me to say? You always knew what I was going to say.
Well, she wants him to be things he just can't be. A father. Like, there's no way George is going to be a good father to anyone.
True. Yeah.
And he's not a good son. He's not a good lover. He's not good at any relationship. The best relationship he has is between that palette and his eyes.
Okay. Do you think, I think this also then draws into question, like, are George Sr. and George Jr. the same person? Because then move on is such an interesting question. Because in some ways, it's almost like a love reunification between George and Dot. He finally gets her to say the things he wants them to say if he's the same George.
I think they are the same George. Variations on a theme.
That's a good way to put it.
But if they're variations, they're not the same.
But as his mother says in Act 1, they're all the same woman, and he replies variations of a theme. And I think it's very same with himself. I think that's slight foreshadowing for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you saying that they're literally the same George?
I'm saying it's theatrically the same George.
and like it's always the same actor, you know, we're playing fast and loose with time and character in the show in hugely important ways. You know, variations on a theme is certainly an interesting lens to look at it through, which I'm contemplating in my brain hole right now.
Because that's repeated all the time, even when he's referring to humans. And, like, I think the one closest thing we get to an emotional moment between George and A1 that isn't, like, a dog or something is between him and his mother. And I find that strange because she also sees the world differently in a way very similar to him. And we'll get to that when we talk. Fuck it, we're talking about Beautiful now.
You watch while I revise the world.
But Beautiful is like her saying like there are towers where there were trees, and he's like, no, that's not how the world was. She's like, this is how I'm seeing it, and it used to be beautiful and now it isn't. And that's either about her like getting closer to death and like all that, or just her seeing the world differently than George or than everyone else, in the same way that George sees things differently than everyone else.
Well, and she also has that line like, this is how I see it, please draw it all so that we can remember this, which starts the theme of like, you know, everything from it's hot up here to the, like, you know, forever in Sunday, like a normal Sunday immortalized forever. You know, I think the lines between Beautiful and children and art are so clearly easy to draw. Like, there are two things you can make in your life, art or children, and that's it. That's your legacy. Which, it's scary. That's real scary. Yeah. Like, you're gonna, you know, it's like contemplation of death, but here are some ways you can fight it. Here are some ways you can defeat death. You got two options: make children or make art, and that's it. It's a scary charge, Mr. Sondheim. How dare you?
Should have been more nihilistic about it. Because in all reality, the Earth will get sucked into a black hole, and all the children and all the art will be gone forever. So
true, but then Doctor Who will be sailing away with Sunday on La Grande Jatte in his TARDIS.
Doctor Who is just another piece of art. He'll be gone as well.
God damn it. You must have done an episode on Urinetown recently.
But to see, it's the only way to see. Always standing by, mapping out the sky, finishing a hat, starting on a hat.
Finishing the hat is good. I liked finishing the hat quite a bit.
Yeah, I love finishing the hat. Finishing the hat might be one of my favorite Sondheim songs.
I think it's the best character song for George, if I'm using that term correctly, but. and I think it has a hummable melody. I had to. Okay, but no, it's very good though.
Take that, Jerry Herman.
Yeah, honestly, it's more humble than I am what I am.
Hey, I am what I am is beautiful.
I'm not hating on I am what I am, but I hum finishing that more.
True. Well, it's probably because he hums during the song. I think my deep cut love in Act One is Everybody Loves Louis. Yeah. And like, there are other songs in there that hit me deeper that are more important. But if we're talking like my baby, my love and joy, like musical theater analysis, Everybody Loves Louis is a fantastic, like, character exposition transition song.
Everybody loves Louie. Louie makes from the heart the bread, George. I mean the bread, George. And then in bed, George. I mean he needs me. I mean like, George,
There is not a lot of overt exposition in this. We don't have a lot of time to see Dot's jealousy. We barely have enough time to see Dot and George kind of break up. It happens in the middle of Everybody Loves Louie after it's happened for the characters. She's like, hey, George, this is Louie. I want you to meet him. Also, because we're dating, and I haven't been dating you for much of the story that has progressed since this moment, but the audience is just finding that out right now. And the music is bouncy, so it feels happy. But also, like, he needs me like bread, George. Oh, it's funny. It's funny in a way that not a lot of people understand. Like, if you look it up in Finishing the Hat, it's needs with a K. Like, he needs me. It's interesting and, like, well-timed. Mm-hmm. And a comedic break in an otherwise very serious piece, which is one of the reasons why I feel so defiantly about the dog song. Like, you don't need that break right then. We have one coming up very soon in Everybody Loves Louie. Not memorable. No one's going to audition with Everybody Loves Louie. I guarantee that. If you do audition with that, good for you.
There's only like one line I really like in Everybody Loves Louie. And the fact that, I don't know, it's just grating on the ears. It really is not a pleasant song to listen to. But the one line I like is, Louie's thoughts are not hard to follow. Louie's art isn't hard to swallow. Which I think is like a very clever, much like how you say the kneading line is.
Double entendre.
It's clever, it's metaphorical, but it is like, this is, you know, it is the embodiment of like my struggle with some of this is like, on first listen, you can get, you know, Louie's art is not hard to swallow. There's a lot of stuff on first listen you can't get in Sunday in the Park.
But that's also
George.
True of all Sondheim's work. Do you think everyone gets Attend the Tale of Sweeney Todd on first listen of Sweeney Todd?
I mean, I think they get enough. He's an evil barber who kills things, and you think it's fun at the end of Act 1, and then you're scared of yourself by the end of Act 2.
I mean, yes, you get that, but what about the clever wordplay specifically?
For sure, but by the end of Sunday in the Park with George, you're like, are they the same Georges? Are they not the same Georges? Why was she Dot, but then she is Mother, but then she's Dot again? Is he the same person? Did we go forward? Why are they shining lasers at me now? I don't understand, right? Like, there's not a moment in Sweeney Todd where you're going to have to turn to the person next to you and you're like, what's happening? And I think, like...
Which is a good thing.
Which is, well...
Is it,
I don't
though?
Think it's... I don't think it's yes. unintentional. Do you think it's a good thing?
A good thing that you don't have to ask someone else what's happening? Yes, I do think that's a good thing.
Okay.
I like a little research. I like vegetables.
Well, you know what? If I have to buy one ticket for a show, I'm not going back, okay?
But you got the playbill in front of you to tell you exactly what's going on.
Shut the fuck up, Jess.
He's really sick of me using that.
Nobody gave me a playbill for this.
That's why you gotta stop sneaking into shows. They don't give you a playbill if you come in the back door. But, like, that's the question, right? That's the question. Like, this is why this show is so meta, right? Do I need to understand your art to appreciate it? You know, should your art be able to be its art on its own as an expression of the artist, whether or not the audience conceives of it and understands it? Like, there is a whole story layer explicitly, not explicitly, but like exactly laid on top of the implicit story that exists in Sunday in the Park with George about Stephen Sondheim, about his understanding of art and whether or not people should appreciate his stuff, take it at face value, or understand the weird, bizarre metaphors he's starting to, you know, come out with, and like his voice, and like, which is the right thing because Broadway only exists in its commercial viability. You know, this is why I struggle with this show so fucking much. blah blah. You'll cut the thing in now, right? And then people will just be singing it, and
that's it.
It won't just be me going to purple violet triangle.
Can I just go on a tangent about my favorite version of Sunday?
Yes,
it is.
Is it the birthday concert?
No, it's the one orchestrated by Jason Robert Brown, which it's just fucking big and it sounds incredible.
I have not heard this one.
It is, yes, you should listen to it because it
I will put it on my list.
It is a wall of voices that start very, like, it's like everything that Sondheim did in like the 84 version, but taken to the nth degree, because Jason Robert Brown is not a subtle man.
Of course.
Jason Robert Brown, president of the Jason Robert Brown fan club. Now, we might get sued for our last 5 years episode.
I don't know if it's my, I don't know if it's my favorite version of Sunday, but it's up there. Have you ever listened to Tick, Tick, Boom by Jonathan Larson?
Yes.
And his parody of Sunday in Tick, Tick, Boom.
And bums, 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 bums.
It is like,
it's hilarious. Buns, buns, buns.
Oh man, what a piece seeped in metaphor. Andrew, do you know if I say Jonathan Larson, what does that mean to you?
Nothing.
He's a dead guy who made Rent.
Jonathan Larson wrote Rent, and
oh, so it, you means know, very yes, little to me.
You know Rent. Jonathan Larson had a show in that he had previously written that hadn't quite made it.
Oh, I think Jess talked about this when we did Rent, I believe.
That makes sense. It was posthumously produced. It was called Tick, Tick, Boom. And there's a song in Tick, Tick, Boom called Sunday, which is about the main character who is kind of a cipher for Jonathan Larson and
president of the Jonathan Larson fan club.
Exactly. His quote of his survival job at a diner, where he has to go into work early on a Sunday morning, and it is an almost note-for-note parody of Sunday, but then the comparison of a fledgling musical theater writer, Jonathan Larson, trying to maintain his living wage by going to a diner on a Sunday morning, parodying a song written by Stephen Sondheim, advanced musical theater artist, about an artist, George Seurat, trying to find his own art in a world like, the, you know, it, the whole
so
thing
meta.
Is fractal infinitely. It's cool.
The amount of meta is too much for me.
Listen to it. You'll like it, even if you don't get as weirdly, bizarrely obsessive about it as I do.
But Sunday is a good song. Very good way to end Act 1. And the word forever and how it's used as like almost a like hymnal is so gorgeous.
Yep. Yep. Well, and I love the very end of it, how like it builds to this huge vocal crescendo, and like you think it's getting really, 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 really big, and then I think it cuts back down to like just piano, bum bum, and then the trumpet comes in, and then it grows again. Like, it is such a reversal of orchestral expectation. Oh, it gives me shivers every time.
Ounce by ounce, putting it together,
you'll come to lunch.
Small amounts, adding it to make a work of art. First of all, you need a good foundation, otherwise it's risky from the start. Takes a little cocktail conversation, but without the proper preparation, having just a vision's no solution. Everything depends on execution. The art of making art is putting it together.
So let's talk about putting it together.
And the cardboard cutouts of Mandy Patinkin?
Yes.
No, I'm sorry, you're going to have to refresh my memory real quick.
Putting it together.
Bit by bit.
Oh, that one. Okay.
I know. You miss.
I know this one.
You
do
miss
this one.
Andy Patinkin. It's okay.
It's true. I don't know who that is, but I.
I am Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare for cardboard cutouts.
I don't remember the cardboard cutouts.
You obviously weren't paying attention.
Yeah.
I was, though.
He's like having conversations with potential donors, and then like cardboard cutouts come out of the stage and they continue having conversations while he goes on to do something else.
Yeah. talking to the audience, talking to you.
Okay. Yeah.
You personally.
Yeah,
I do remember that part where he talks to me, because I like it when they talk to me. Honestly, I do. I mean, that's some of my favorite stuff is when they talk directly to me. Well, this is one of the catchier songs.
Yeah. The song you barely remember. So catchy.
Oh, I wanted to make sure I had the right one, because sometimes the title of the song is in a different song, and I don't know.
Stephen Sondheim. Sometimes the title of the song is in a different song.
I mean,
welcome to my TED Talk.
Am I wrong, though? I mean,
No, you've never... I don't know if you've never been more right, but you're very right.
So we'll be talking about one song, and I'm like, oh, that song, the title. Oh, and then it's like, no, I was talking about this song. And I'm
right.
Like,
right. Yeah, first midnight, second midnight, third midnight, or the last one. They're all different.
What about that's a different moment? Show. It's in the woods, or any moment?
No, I do like this song. And him talking with all the donors and everything. But I don't know. This was kind of where I was still kind of lost from the transition from Act 1 to 2. And I was trying to figure out what the heck was going on. It was a little bit rough for me. I get confused very easily. If you've seen our show, you know this.
Wait till the last 5 years episode where he was convinced there was two couples.
I thought there was. When you do like a time jump and it's the same person playing a different character that has right. the same name,
yeah.
and now there's lasers, and I'm like, okay, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah, but what did you think about George 3?
There was a third one?
No, there. I won't.
Is that the one that time travels back in time to meet Dot?
Yeah, exactly. And then they have to restart the universe by blowing up the TARDIS. What are we talking about?
Right, yeah. There is something going on in the second act.
I love this song. This song's so fun.
It is fun. No, it is fun. It's a fun song. If you just listen to it by itself and don't get confused, it's great.
It's a frustrating song, though, because you are... Like, all the things that are being said to him are things that we artists have had said to us, like, oh, it's they love to give advice, George.
Yeah. Well, and that's the fascinating thing about putting it together is it is, like, one of Sondheim's most rewritten songs for other things. You can see it in Finishing the Hat. Like, he rewrote it for Barbra Streisand, and he rewrote it for Putting It Together, the review he wrote, and a bunch of other things. And in every other incarnation... The it in Putting It Together is the art. It's like you have to find these pieces and you have to convince the director. Like in all the lyrics he rewrote, it's about that. But in Sunday in the Park with George, putting it together, the it for the most part is the funding, which is fascinating.
And also the rhymes in the song are like Sondheim at his absolute best. Like,
oh, 100%. A beautiful song to listen to. And I think you're right, Andrew. It is one of the more listenable songs.
Obviously, you guys had listened to the dog song, which is the most listenable song.
All right. You know,
Do you know what
the dog song is? It's rough.
When the dog song came on, I thought something had snapped in his head and he had lost it. So, I mean, I wasn't really sure what was going on.
Sondheim's initial plan for the dog song was to put what was then called a vocoder, but we might call an auto-tuner or a voice changer, in the paint palette that Mandy Patinkin would be holding during that number so that they could switch it on and off to change his voice as he impersonated the different dogs.
That is a great idea, and why didn't he do it?
That feels like a Hal Prince saying, I'm just going to put you all in T-shirts.
I think he probably couldn't get the funding for the vocoders. That was what it
no,
is.
No, Mandy Patinkin was like, I can do it myself. Why do you need a voice changer?
Yeah, that's really what happened. Mandy Patinkin was like, I am Mandy Patinkin. How dare you?
Man, that's rough.
Rough.
The grass is rough and the girls are rough and Mandy Patinkin is rough.
Rough. Let's talk about Move On.
Can we get a cover of that by Rolf the Dog?
I don't think that exists. So we all love this song, right?
I love this song.
The dog song?
Move on.
No, get out of here. Move on. Move on.
Move on is the most emotional moment of time travel I've ever seen.
And I watch Endgame.
Yeah, that part where after the Monopoly game.
Oh shit, don't spoil that part. That's a good part.
I know. Everyone loves the, you know, you never thought Stan Lee would have his cameo as the Top Hat.
Well, he had to finish it.
Agreed, and it says something like really effective to me, where it feels like this all has a resolution in a way that is emotionally satisfying, although logically it may not always link together.
It says something very satisfying if you accept that George in the future is the same George from the past, and it says something very confusing if you don't.
True, but I think that is the moment where you need to like accept that conceit, that like Dot, at least in her world, thinks she's talking to George Surratt the first, or however you want to conceive of him.
Variation on a theme.
So this is like a extremely meta musical talking about the work of art of a person whose entire history has been completely bastardized to the point where it basically is entirely fictitious.
Right? Isn't that crazy?
And we all love it.
Just ask how Alexander Hamilton feels right now.
Rip.
No, I mean, you know, what is it? Stop worrying if your vision is new. Let others that make that decision, they usually do. Powerful, powerful, powerful words to any artist out there. Like, you know, people are going to judge you. Get over it. If you try to serve the people, you'll never make it. You have to do what makes you. And like, this is where I struggle with, struggle is really the wrong word. I'm misusing it. This is where I find this musical very challenging on a personal level. Like, I'm a high school theater teacher. I work with, you know, neophyte artists on a daily basis who are just learning their art for the very first time. This is the first time I'm singing a song in front of the audience. This is my first lighting design. This is the first time I've ever played a role. And like, to find the way to give them the courage to do that is hugely difficult and hugely important, because so many people, you know, like, yeah, I acted once and I hated it and I never did it again. And that's one of the most tragic things in the world to me. And so like, getting people to dive past the barrier of exterior criticism and the barrier of, you know, just like, all of this stuff is so subjective in spite of the craftsmanship, in spite of, you know, the challenges. And like, you'll never make it if you care what everyone thinks. You should care what a couple people think. You should care what the people who you respect think. But if you care what everyone thinks, if you care what critics think, you'll never make it, which is also so bizarre to me, because in my other life I critique musical theater and, you know, overtly judge people, and I try not to. I hope to never be labeled a critic, but I have on several occasions, and it, you know, my heart shrinks three sizes every day that happens. You know, I love that people make art, and I hope that I hope they continue to do it in spite of my opinions of it, good or bad.
You know, we haven't seen Helena Bonham Carter in a movie for a long while, so.
It's true. She's still weeping in Tim Burton's Second Kitchen based on my opinions of her.
Tim Burton left her because of your video, so.
It's true. It's true. But don't they still live in the same conjoined house? I think Move On is beautiful and hugely challenging.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, I agree. Like, even that quote you said earlier, like, that applies to even things on a smaller level. Like, when I started this podcast, I was like, is it too similar to the Happy Hour podcast, or at least in structure? I was like, don't worry if your vision is new. Don't worry about it. Just do it. That was running through my head, and then I just did it.
Yeah. And, like, that's, you know, that is the biggest lesson I think to be learned of this thing, and is why the meta-ness of it like kind of falls through. And is why I'd absolutely struggle with it so much, is because it does strike such a really particular core, like in both its individual beats and as a whole. Like, I have talked in the past about things like Great Comet and stuff, where like it is building to a really satisfying ending. But the ending, if you listen to it on its own, is not terribly satisfying. The individual beats of Sunday in the Park with George are very impactful and satisfying on their own. It's why so many of these things have, so many of these songs have lives beyond this musical. But then when you put them all together and you put them in order and you attach characters and meaning to them, it becomes this really, really challenging evening that is challenging an audience about the audience's perception of art while they are experiencing a piece of art. There was a theater group in failed theater history, but sometime, called the Futurists. Think maybe more than a century ago. That's about as accurate as I can get. And the Futurists were very adversarial to their audience. They would often like put fresh paint on the seats in the auditorium before the ladies showed up in their fancy dresses. Yeah, a literal thing they would do, so that they would sit down get paint on their asses and like really challenge their audience. And their, you know, a lot of their motto was like, yeah, we're doing art, fuck you. I'm oversimplifying now. But it's a weird world for art to live in, because we often envision art as this like commercial, you know, public satisfying average sort of thing, you know, the Taylor Swifts and the Be More Chills of the world. And those
and
are awesome.
Playing Monopoly.
Exactly. And like, those are great. We should all get shawarma in our post credit scene from time to time, but we also need the bizarre and strange pushing the boundaries of the world. And like, then to make a piece that's commenting on that, where people are, you know, characters are saying to George Seurat, oh, pointillism, what do you mean? It's just colors. That looks red when it's close up, but really it looks like a hat far away. Like, the meta knows no bounds in this show.
It's too meta.
All right. So, what are your overall thoughts on Sunday in the Park with George and your cheese rating? I'm going to start with Andrew and let Tommy think about his cheese rating for a second.
I think, does he need to be explained the cheese rating, or are we good?
I do not need to be explained the cheese rating.
It's nonsense.
Think about what my cheese rating is, but
I mean, I never can decide, and I always the one that has to pick first.
And you made it up.
I made it up.
Do you want me to go first? I got mine ready.
No, I just want to say that the real moral of this whole musical is that eventually you may create art that is good enough that someone else will come along and retell your story completely inaccurately so no one understands who you were.
George Seurat might have been just like a really deeply emotional, kind, open fella.
But no, he's a fucking asshole. How's that for immortalized, dick? Children and art, am I right? All right.
Both his children died, so this is what we got.
Okay, but no, I mean, as far as the musical goes, I like the music, and I like the first act quite a bit, and then it just kind of tumbles into itself, and it ends up, I think it ends up with its head firmly up its ass, and I don't know if I can appreciate that. So, I don't know. It's fine. It's a little too meta for me.
What kind of cheese is that, though?
Oh, what kind of cheese is that? Oh, Jesus Christ.
Is that it?
I don't know. I'm going to have to consider my cheese rating. I'm deliberating.
All right.
I'll go next. Sunday in the Park with George is probably not my favorite Sondheim, but it has my favorite Sondheim songs in it. Like, my top three Sondheim songs are all in this musical. So take that for what it is. I love it. I don't think that the original Broadway recording is the best way to view it. I would never appropriate or tell you to go find a bootleg of the Jake Gyllenhaal production, but you know.
No, don't ever do that. But if you Google it, it'll just show up.
Yes.
But don't do it.
Or the Julian Ovenden French production that was also very good.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't do that. It's fabulous. Don't do it.
Don't even try. Nope. But my cheese rating is actually macaroni and cheese by Crayola, where if you use that as a dot, you can create art.
Because it's a color.
What the fuck are you talking about, Jess?
My cheese rating is brie, because one, it's a French cheese, but also...
Yeah, I was going to go with something like that as well.
But also, as a child, I did not like brie, and I had lots of friends who would like brie, and they'd be like, you should try brie, and I would try it, and I didn't like it, and I would sort of pretend I didn't like it, because I had already established this facade that I didn't like it, but sometimes secretly at 2 a.m. I go to the grocery store and buy a pound of brie and eat it quietly and hope the internet doesn't hear me eating it.
Yeah, fuck you, internet.
Yeah, that's the thing to say as a content creator.
Oops.
Andrew, you figured out your cheese rating yet?
Yeah, sure. I'll give it blue cheese. Why not?
blue.
blue.
Yep, because he goes blue. So, you know, it's fine.
Tommy, I am so glad you came on. This was so much fun,
you guys. This was fantastic.
Do you have anything you want to promote out there?
Oh, God. I don't know. I like to think of my internet presence as a hibernation, not an abandonment. Keep your eye on Musical Mash on Twitter and Musical Theater Mash on YouTube. I'm, you know, to quote Elaine Stritch, I'm still here. Maybe sooner rather than later. Maybe later rather than sooner. Who knows? It's a mystery.
He's working on something, guys.
Yeah, I don't even know what it is, but we'll see.
And if I can give a personal recommendation, if you're all caught up on musicals with cheese and looking for another musical theater podcast.
Which, make sure you watch all of our episodes first, obviously.
Don't move all of them.
Every single one.
Even our Christmas Carol Weird episode. You gotta listen through all that.
Oh, we
that was a good one, actually.
We have some of those, too.
I thought that was funny.
You want a good starting point that I think would be a good place to start, I'd start with their Gypsy episode. It's a long one.
Yeah.
I have a funny story that, like, I was going to a funeral that day. I had a 4-hour drive ahead of me, and they posted it right before I left. So I was like, and that cheered me up on my way there. So that's the reason why that has such a personal
Jim and Tomic's
connection.
Musical Theater Happy Hour. Great pre-show podcasts before funerals.
Exactly.
Very good before funerals.
But
if I had to give one recommendation, only listen to this before funerals. It's very good for that.
Speaking of funerals, today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese. Thank you guys
Sir.
You caught me. Thank you guys for listening. We are on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and all other podcast platforms at Musicals with Cheese. Our Twitter is at Cheesy Musicals. Get us on Patreon. Give us a couple dollars. You can get some commentaries that nobody else can find. We'll be doing a new one in June, but our Cats one is up there for you to take and listen to and discover how much we hate cats. We're on Instagram at Musicals with Cheese. Our YouTube page is also Musicals with Cheese. If you want to shoot us an email, shoot us at email@musicaltheaterlives@gmail.com. Our title card was created by the amazing Jolene Casco. Send her some love at Jolene Casco on Instagram. Tommy, is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening.
That's great. That was great. Andrew, you got anything?
That was very good.
Anything to top that?
Fuck you guys. Get out of here.
Dog Strong deserved better representation in this show.
Oh, that was a rough ending.
Ah, it set you up and you knock it down. That's why we're a perfect partnership. All right, guys, we'll see you next time on Musicals with Cheese.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.